Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 20, 2020. Lawmakers accuse South Sudan Army and the former rebels of the SPLA-IO of killing and abducting civilians in Lanya County.
2 weeks now, the displacement also started in Lanya, where thousands of people are scattered. Most of them ran to the town.
And the head of the Episcopal Church in South Sudan is condemning recent intercommunal violence in South Sudan.
The Episcopal Church of South Sudan is deeply concerned about the disturbing reports of communal violence, cattle raiding, killing of innocent people, displacement of civilians, and destruction of properties.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairperson of South Sudan National Task Force on COVID-19 has introduced mandatory wearing of masks across the country as one of the measures to fight COVID-19. Vice President Hussein Abdulbaghi says the spread of the coronavirus in the country is alarming. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Vice President Hassan Abdelbaghi, chairperson of the newly reconstituted COVID-19 Task Force, calls the surge in confirmed cases alarming. Abdelbaghi says the pandemic is real and requires additional measures to control its spread in South Sudan.
I want us to examine how to communicate and engage our communities to make them understand the risk in depth. We must come up with enforcement criteria, mandatory mask wearing in public, and must be introduced together with tighter regulations on the prevention of transmission.
Wearing face masks helps prevent the spread of coronavirus, according to the World Health Organization, but it's not clear how the government will enforce the measure in a country where millions of people struggle to put food on the table. Dr. Akwai Cham, an associate professor of public health at the University of Juba, says the task force should have thought about that before making the wearing of face masks mandatory.
We know that why we fell off the lockdown last time, because people cannot stay home. They need something to eat. They have to go out. The same scenario can happen also. You are told to buy masks and you cannot afford. Then you just sit down and you don't do anything. And that's the same scenario. Unless government is serious enough to make sure that this mask is made available to the public, those who cannot afford.
Juba resident Swara Nelson agrees that people should wear face masks in public, but wonders how the government will enforce the mandatory rule.
In March, it was announced that every household is going to receive food items because of the pandemic. It was the government that announced the initiative, but since then, up to now, nothing has been seen. So that means even the government do not lift its word. And even if the task force say it is mandatory, it will even fail to lift its word because they don't even implement whatever they say. What they say is what they don't implement, and what they implement is what they don't say.
Abdelbaghi says all senior political leaders should be tested for the virus to encourage ordinary citizens to get tested. He says this will also help in fighting the stigma associated with COVID-19.
As a protective measures, I call upon all of us, all the senior government officials and others and our society at large to desist from the social interaction, such as visit or family household.
COVID-19 Task Force spokesman Dr. Makur Matur says the task force is reviewing all preventive measures announced by the former task force to redouble efforts to fight the pandemic.
We are expecting cases to hike, and of course with the hike in the number of cases, we also expect casualties to go up, but that's what we don't want to see. We also expect the health system to get stretched, and that's what we don't want to see.
As of Tuesday, South Sudan had reported 347 COVID-19 cases, 4 recoveries and 6 deaths. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Africa's government has bowed to pressure to release the scientific modeling on which it based its decision to continue enforcing what is now almost 60 days of lockdown. COVID-19 has so far infected about 17,000 people and killed 312, making it the country in Africa hardest hit by the pandemic. Many citizens and opposition parties want an immediate end to the regulations that have been in place to try to slow the spread of coronavirus. But the latest information from scientists reveals that this would probably be premature. For VOA News, Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The presentation by one of the government's lead scientific modelers is likely to quiet some of the angry voices that have been demanding an end to South Africa's long lockdown. The emergency regulations are indeed strangling the economy and causing immense suffering. Dr. Sheetal Silal says even if citizens maintain measures such as social distancing and wearing masks, the nation faces a grim future.
We are projecting, under the optimistic scenario, there would be just over 40,000 deaths by November. And this picks up perhaps to around 45,000-48,000 deaths in the pessimistic scenario.
The scientists predict about 1 million infections by the end of the year. According to their modeling, there won't be enough healthcare for all the casualties.
Whether we are going to follow the optimistic trajectory of the epidemic or the pessimistic trajectory of the epidemic, the threshold of ICU beds are projected to be exceeded. And they're projected to be exceeded quite early on in the epidemic, the optimistic projections being in July or just the start of July, and the pessimistic predictions in June.
At this stage, South Africa has only 4,000 ICU beds. But health economists say even if the country did have the tens of thousands required to treat COVID-19 patients, it would not have the ventilators or the healthcare workers needed to save their lives. The projections show that the expected flood of coronavirus cases is going to cause an unprecedented health crisis in South Africa, with people admitted to hospitals with other conditions also likely to suffer and perhaps die. Sital says there simply won't be capacity to treat all patients.
When ICU bed threshold is exceeded, those requiring but not getting an ICU bed will be occupying a general hospital bed or a non-ICU bed. So what we can expect actually is that the general bed threshold can be exceeded quite a bit early on in the epidemic.
The scientist emphasizes her team's modeling is not set in stone.
We are in the middle of May right now, and so COVID-19 has only been around in the world for 4.5 months. And here we are trying to make projections on the entire span of the epidemic for the next 6 to 8 months. So there's considerable uncertainty in how the epidemic is going to fully play out. We do acknowledge that this particular plot of what will happen in the next 6 to 8 months is going to be updated and most likely going to be changing with every update.
Whether that change is for the better is up to South Africans, says the government. The scientists say lives will be saved and infections minimized if citizens heed methods proven to decrease the possibility of infection, and if the state scales up testing and health systems as much as possible. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Kenyan authorities have forcefully evicted more than 7,000 people from land in Nairobi's slums over the last month, defying a court order. Authorities say they demolished homes because they were built on public land. Critics say mass evictions during the pandemic are inhuman and could further spread the coronavirus, as Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
42-year-old Daniel Nungu saw the 3 tractors coming before his home was demolished last week. We saw police officers coming into the area. They blocked the road and left the only one used by tractors. Ndongo says, at around 9, they started demolition. They didn't care whether there were children in the house or anything else. They began demolition, he says. Defying a court order, authorities on Friday forcibly evicted Ndungu's family and other Nairobi slum dwellers, making them homeless in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic.
Kutoka hapa sasa mimi natulia tu nikingoja vile tutatengenezewa.
Ndungu says he will stay here in the cold and wait. Now there is nowhere to go, he says. Even if I want to move to a new place, there's no place to move to and I have no money. Moving to a new place, people won't accept you because they will say you have coronavirus. Others who could moved into the crowded dwellings of friends and relatives. The evictions, which started in April, left over 5,000 people homeless earlier this month in Nairobi's Kariobangi neighborhood. The state-run Nairobi City Water and Sewerage Company claims ownership of the land and says the families have been occupying it illegally since 2008.
People are told this in advance. You are actually sitting on public land. There's a project that is terminating here. We may be able to, you know, probably open up and then pump sewage in this direction. People know this, but then either people don't move or they just continue staying there.
37-year-old Butcher Hussein Wako says he has government receipts showing he owns the land he was forced from. But public land is too often sold illegally in Kenya, leaving those who were cheated out of their money, like Wako, also homeless. They demolished our home and poor people's homes. I slept in the cold for 2 days and there is a coronavirus pandemic, Wako says. They told us to go back home when we demonstrated against the demolition. They disrupted it and tear gassed us, he says. A small riot erupted earlier this month as the evicted clashed with police in Kariobangi and set fire to cars and tires. A Kenyan High Court had earlier ordered a halt to further demolitions until a petition by residents is heard in June. But for thousands of Kenyans already left homeless, those still being evicted, there's little hope for justice. Mohammed Yusu for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the head of the Episcopal Church in South Sudan is condemning recent intercommunal violence in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
When you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Like other top athletes, the long-distance runners of East Africa are feeling the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Runners from Kenya, Ethiopia, and other countries are missing out on months of group training, competition, and income. Some have to find other ways to make a living. Marta Vanderhoof reports for VOA from Amsterdam.
Ethiopian runner Mimi Belete competes internationally for Bahrain and was training to participate in her third Olympics this summer. With training camps being shut down because of the coronavirus, Mimi is now training by herself on the outskirts of Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
It's difficult because, you know, when you're training with group, it's much easier. And when you're training with group, you feel like powerful. You're training alone, sometimes I feel like very weak, hopeless sometimes.
While Mimi is missing out on potential prize money and starting fees, she feels fortunate that Bahrain is paying her a salary. Michelle Booting, a Dutch manager of more than 30 Kenyan athletes, says less prominent runners and those just starting out don't have that kind of cushion.
Most African countries don't have like a stipendium for their athletes. So the alternatives to make money, they really have to look outside the athletics. In East Africa, many athletes, and especially in Kenya, have like a small farm or they have small businesses that they have opened up, and some focus more on that now. But running-wise, there's very little you can do to make money.
The pandemic forced the postponement of top spring races like the Boston Marathon. The Olympics were due to take place in Tokyo in July and August, but that too was postponed. There's a small chance some of the fall races might take place, although the Berlin Marathon, an important one for top athletes, has already been cancelled. The cancellation of the races has Ethiopian runner-turned-coach Getane Tesema worried. He is a coach with a Dutch-based agency training top athletes such as Berhanu Legesse, who won the Tokyo Marathon twice. Getane is not only worried about the condition of his runners now that they train by themselves, but also about their financial future.
You can say there are three kinds of groups in this case. Athletes who won a lot of prize money, they don't have a problem at all. And athletes who went aboard and won some races. And certainly there are upcoming athletes, they don't have income at all. And that group, they are really hurting right now with income.
The Tokyo Summer Olympics are now scheduled for 2021, if the pandemic is brought under control. Mimi Belete had initially qualified to run for Bahrain, but now she is unsure if she has to compete in new races to confirm her spot on the Olympic team. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Amsterdam.
The Archbishop of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan is calling on communities across the country to stop intercommunal violence. Speaking at a press conference in Juba today, Archbishop Justin Bade Arama says the transitional government of national unity should intervene to stop intercommunal violence in parts of the country. He says partners in the transitional government of national unity should also form local governments at the state and county levels to end violence and lawlessness in parts of the country. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
At a news conference in Juba today, Archbishop Justin Bade Arama said the intercommunal clashes that have occurred in several parts of the country over the past few weeks have led to loss of life and property. He urged communities to resolve their differences in an amicable manner.
The Episcopal Church of South Sudan is deeply concerned about the disturbing reports of communal violence, cattle raiding, killing of innocent people, displacement of civilians, and destruction of properties in most parts of the country.
Archbishop Arama called on the unity government to step in and end the violence.
The first appeal is to the revitalized transitional government of national unity to intervene to restore law and order to prevent further intercommunal violence in the country. The government to urgently finalize the formation of the state governments in order to handle the emerging violent situation at the grassroots level.
Archbishop Arama also called on the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and other agencies to distribute relief food to the displaced. On the fighting between government forces and National Salvation Front rebels, Arama said it has been difficult for the church to go to the affected areas and verify the facts due to the COVID-19 pandemic. He urged government and NAS rebels to respect the Rome Declaration the party signed in December, in which they recommitted themselves to observe a ceasefire.
I'm addressing to the SSPDF and then the fighters from NAS that please, in the name of Jesus, avoid this violent confrontation for the sake of the innocent people. And let's maintain the Rome Declaration and stick to it.
He also called on the South Sudanese people to adhere to all WHO preventive guidelines on preventing the spread of coronavirus, including social distancing and regular washing hands with water and soap.
To our Christians, we urge all of you to continue pray from your homes with patience, humility, obedience, and strong faith in God. The time will come when God will bring this pandemic to an end, and we will welcome you back to give thanks to God and to continue with our normal worship and fellowships.
Archbishop Arama says South Sudan is dealing with three pandemics: the coronavirus, intercommunal violence and insecurity, and poverty. He says when people are always being displaced and destroying things, there is a rise in poverty. Intercommunal clashes have been ongoing for months in Jonglei State, Terekeka County of Central Equatoria State, and in Tonj and Warap State. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Some lawmakers representing Lanya County at the National Legislative Assembly in Juba are accusing the South Sudan Army and former rebels of the SPLA-IO of committing human rights violations, including abducting, killing civilians, burning villages, and causing mass displacement during ongoing fighting with National Salvation Front rebels. South Sudan's military spokesman say his forces are only targeting rebel camps. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Dusman Joyce, one of the lawmakers representing Lanya County in the National Legislative Assembly, says South Sudan People's Defense Force, soldiers and SPLA-IO forces have stormed several villages under the guise of searching for rebels.
2 weeks now, the displacement also started in Lanya, where thousands of people are scattered. Most of them ran to the town. We have in Loka, we have in Lukuruba, we have in Concord, we have in that side of Mere. And now the 3 days, these people now have entered now into that side of Bereka. In Bereka, they have started burning houses. They are burning houses in Bereka. They are adopting people. And this is done by our people, our forces, because they are looking for the rebels in the bushes.
SSPDF spokesman Major General Lulwai Kwong denies government forces ever targeted civilians during military operations in Lanya County. Kwong says government soldiers are targeting rebel camps from which NAS fighters train and carry out road ambushes on civilian vehicles.
They were clearly not because they were being intentionally targeted, but because they were very close to the NAS camp.
In a brief published today, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, says fighting in Lanya County has affected 30,000 people and displaced 5,700 people in April alone. Joyce says government soldiers have also kidnapped civilians.
We call all the parties carrying out the current violation on human rights and freedom of the people and fighting in Mukaya, Kopera, Bereka, Lanya, Dongoro area to immediately stop the kidnap, killing, torture of innocent people from the area.
Military spokesman Kwong denies the accusations made against the army.
If there are civilians who have gone missing, then they are not in our custody. We have no reason to arrest civilians as long as there are civilians. Our target was very clear. It was there were rebel camps that were identified by intelligence operatives, and we moved in to ensure that the threat they have been posing from the advances is neutralized, and that was exactly what we did.
MP Joyce says the SSPDF killed at least 4 civilians over the last 3 days in Lanya County. Joyce also accuses the SPLAIO of slaughtering three teenagers who were trying to cross the border into Uganda. Taban Luka, another MP representing Lenya County in the National Legislative Assembly, says killing unarmed civilians defies South Sudanese culture and laws.
We don't know, really. Our people came with a culture which was not part of our culture in South Sudan, whereby you arrest, you torture, and you slaughter somebody. We condemn this, and we are saying, for us, people of South Sudan, we came a long way. We cannot torture ourselves in this way. We are urging all the forces to cease this and to adhere to humanitarian law.
Kwang calls the accusation a complete lie. Lucas says the people of South Sudan cannot continue dying at the hands of their own soldiers who are supposed to give them protection.
We are requesting our government, under the wise leadership of His Excellency General Salva Kiir Mayardit, to take necessary measures to make sure that the hostilities is stopped and the humanitarian access is open for the people of Lenya. This is no time for some of our people to suffer, because we have agreement holding.
Lucas says unless the parties to the revitalized peace agreement form state governments, the killing will likely continue and many more people will be displaced. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
MPs who represent Lenya County of Central Equatoria State are accusing government and SPLAIO forces of abducting and killing civilians, burning villages, and causing massive displacement during military operations against NAS rebels. MP Desmond Joyce says government and SPLAIO forces stormed several villages under the guise of searching for rebels for the past 2 weeks, causing massive displacement. Army spokesman Major General Luo Rui Kwong denies government forces targeted civilians during those military campaigns. He says they were targeting rebel camps where NAS fighters train and plan ambushes. UN OCHA says fighting in Lenya County has affected some 30,000 people. The Archbishop of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan is asking communities across the country to desist from intercommunal violence and is urging the unity government to form local and state governments quickly. Archbishop Justice Badi Arama said intercommunal clashes have occurred in areas over the past few weeks. He says the church is deeply concerned about reports that it's getting of cattle raids, destruction of property, and the killing of innocent civilians. He urged communities to resolve their differences in an amicable manner and called on the unity government to intervene and restore law and order. And finally, the head of South Sudan's new national task force on COVID-19 says everyone must now wear face masks in public, but did not explain how it would enforce that new rule. The announcement follows word that nearly all members of the former COVID-19 task force tested positive for coronavirus. Vice President Hussein Abdelbaghi, chairperson of the newly reconstituted task force, calls the surge in confirmed cases alarming. A Juba-based analyst says many citizens cannot afford to buy face masks. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Corona Ja by Kero Simon.
Mbavu kavunu kuni teke kano wuliandu Kaku jingate Ngerile mama 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 basuma Malu mama Malu baba Malu mama Werile mama corona wasolo Werile baba corona wasolo Werile mama 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 basuma Malu mama Corona Corona jakum virus. Corona, Corona jakum.
We've been listening to Kero Simon with the song Corona Ja. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
gunbira mininga gunbira uri sudani ngami uri kunobe yambia yo minikali gaja gaja na pal minikali gaja mianu kutambulo yo kandu kali gaja.